As a parent, it's tough to catch everything. So when my son showed me his reading assignment, my heart sunk. It was some of the most explicit material you can imagine. I met with lawmakers. They couldn't believe what I was showing them. Their faces turned bright red.
The question of what books should be in schools and what say parents should have about those books became a heated debate in the recent race for governor in Virginia. This was an ad for Republican Glenn Youngkin, who won the seat featuring Fairfax County parent Laura Murphy. The parent is talking about the book Beloved by Toni Morrison and won the Pulitzer Prize. And he's not the only one taking up this issue. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says he's upset. This week, he sent a public letter to the Texas Education Agency. In it, he asked the agency to investigate the availability of pornography in state schools, especially in the form of books, and he promises to prosecute anyone who provides those materials. But pornography is famously hard to define. I know it when I see it, Justice Potter Stewart wrote in a 1964 opinion for the Supreme Court. And the Texas Education Agency has another task at hand, this one from Republican state legislator Matt Krause. In late October, Krause sent the agency a list of 850 books. He wants to know if any Texas schools have those books and how much money has been spent on them. After the break, we'll dive into the subject of banned books and actions some legislators have taken across the country. This is the 1A Podcast. I'm Jen White. And remember to have your questions answered on future topics or just to let us know what you think, tweet us at 1A.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Wyzant. Need a smarter way to learn anything? Wyzant is the nation's biggest network of professional tutors, connecting you with experts in more than 12,000 topics for personalized one-on-one lessons. On Wyzant, you choose how much to pay, who you work with, and when you meet, in person or online. NPR listeners can experience the difference personalized tutoring makes this back-to-school season by taking $25 off each of your first three lessons. Head to wyzant.com/NPR today to start learning.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're talking about banned books. Joining us from Dallas, Texas is Miranda Suarez. She covers the Fort Worth area for KERA, the NPR station for North Texas. Miranda, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you started looking into this topic after a parent in Southlake, Texas, complained about a book in their kid's classroom. It's called This Book is Anti-Racist. What happened?
Yeah, so This Book is Anti-Racist is by a Massachusetts author named Tiffany Jewell. She's an educator, and she basically wrote this guide that's aimed at 10 to 15-year-olds, teaching them how to figure out their own identity. And, you know, it has passages about kind of the history of racism and resistance in America and how students and kids can resist racism in their everyday life. And this book became kind of a point of contention in Carroll ISD, which is the school district in Southlake, Texas. Basically, what happened is that a local parent complained about the book being kept in a fourth grade teacher's classroom. And that teacher was publicly reprimanded by the school board after that complaint was made. The school district does deny that it had anything to do with the book, but it did kind of spark this huge conversation about censorship in schools and when it's appropriate for a parent to step in and for what reasons.
And what was the teacher actually reprimanded for? What was found objectionable in the book?
So that detail was not given by the school board. The school board basically said publicly, this isn't about the book. This is a personnel matter.
So again, as you said, this is in the same school district, Carroll ISD, where an administrator told teachers they have to offer opposing views to books about the Holocaust. Give us more context about what's happening at schools.
Yeah, so that Holocaust comment was made adjacent to a new Texas state law called HB 3979. And I think that's probably better known as one of the many kind of critical race theory bans that have been put in place around the country. What it effectively does is limits the way teachers can talk about race and racism. And so these Holocaust comments came to light in a secret recording that NBC News published. It was this meeting between an administrator with Carroll ISD and some teachers, in which this administrator said, you know, under HB 3979, if you have a book about the Holocaust in your classroom, you also have to have a book with an opposing view. And in the recording, like, the teachers in this meeting are pretty horrified. After this came public, the superintendent of the school district walked it back, apologized, and made clear, like, HB 3979 does not require schools to teach, like, incorrect historical facts. But again, it was one of those incidents that really put to light kind of people's worries about, like, the chilling effect on educators right now when there are all these mandates about what can and cannot be taught when it comes to race and discrimination.
What are the demographics of that area?
In my understanding, not an expert here, Southlake is primarily white.
Now, Southlake is a suburb of Dallas and Fort Worth, and Fort Worth is represented in part by Republican state legislator Matt Krause, who asked the state's Association of School Boards to investigate the use of 850 books in schools. What motivated him to do that?
So that's a great question, and it's one that reporters in Texas have been trying to get to the bottom of. I emailed Krause's office to ask kind of what the goal of this list is. They referred me to the investigative committee that he sits on in the House. I have not heard back from them. But Krause did tell the Texas Tribune last month that he's not going to provide any details on why he started this investigation for fear of compromising it.
What types of books are on the list? Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, so this book is Anti-Racist by Tiffany Jewell. The book that we talked about earlier is definitely on that list. And overwhelmingly, the books are books from LGBTQ authors or books with LGBTQ characters. They're books about race and racial justice, gender and sexuality, and sex ed books.
And is it clear exactly what he's looking for? He said he's not releasing a lot of details, but do you know anything?
So what he said in his letter is that he wants an inventory from Texas school districts on how many books they have in their possession from this list, how much money they spent on those books, and beyond that list, how many books they have that might cause discomfort to students, in his words. In that email I sent to his office, I also asked if schools have gotten back to him on this, and I didn't get a response. I know that the Texas Tribune has reached out to school districts around Texas, and there is kind of varying responses on who says, yeah, we'll do this inventory, and who says, no, we won't.
Now, is this an enforceable request?
That is a good question, too. The Texas Education Agency has not been really vocal on this either.
We're talking to reporter Miranda Suarez, who covers Fort Worth for the NPR station KERA. Now, Miranda, is what's happening in Texas also happening nationwide? Are communities across the country contending with books being challenged and banned?
Oh, absolutely. Like, this is definitely not a new issue. The American Library Association has something called the Office for Intellectual Freedom, and they do a lot of work when it comes to book bans in schools and libraries. They come out with a list every year of the most banned books around the country. And if you go to their website, you can see lists back 20 years. So this is not just an issue in Texas. And it's been an issue, from the experts I've spoken to, basically for as long as schools have existed.
And did the ALA say they're seeing any trends in the current crop of books?
Yes, they did. So I spoke to Deborah Caldwell Stone, who leads the Office for Intellectual Freedom. She said it's hard to say numerically if there's actually been like an increase in the number of challenges just because their data isn't comprehensive. But she can say that since the murder of George Floyd, they have seen an uptick in challenges to books about race, racial justice, police violence, and even just the lived experiences of Black people. So according to Caldwell Stone, like, what books tend to get challenged really depends on the current cultural moment. For example, the other kind of most challenged category of books a lot of the time tends to be books by LGBTQ authors with LGBTQ characters.
Miranda, what do you think it says that this issue is showing up at such crucial political moments?
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that everybody that we've talked about so far has been running for something. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we're talking about Youngkin in Virginia or Matt Krause here in Texas, he's running for state attorney general right now and while he's bringing up this issue. Governor Greg Abbott, like you mentioned, has thrown his hat into the ring of this books issue, and he's running for re-election.
And we should mention here that Greg Abbott weighed into this conversation. He sent two letters to the Texas Education Agency asking it to look into so-called pornographic materials in schools and refer any instances to authorities for prosecution. Is it clear what he means by pornographic materials?
Based on his letters, no. He references two books, including Genderqueer by Maya Kobabe, who I know you're going to hear from later in the hour, basically condemning them for containing sexually explicit content. I reached out to the Texas Education Agency yesterday to ask them, do you guys have a standard for what constitutes pornography? Like, what content should not be included in schools? And they got back to me with a statement that said, you know, we got the letter and we're reviewing it. Details will come later.
And I want to be really clear here, Miranda. We're talking about two things. There's books that are just in school libraries and then books that are used as part of the curriculum, right?
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. I know specifically in the case that we talked about earlier in Carroll ISD with This Book is Anti-Racist, that book was included in like a teacher's personal classroom. Yeah.
That's Miranda Suarez, the Fort Worth reporter for NPR station KERA in Dallas, Texas. Miranda, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We're having our latest Writer's Room conversation with three authors whose works have been banned or challenged in schools. A reminder that you can join future conversations, download our 1A Vox Pop app, and leave us a voicemail. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Grifols. Senior Director of Corporate Affairs, Vlasta Hakes, explains the science behind the plasma-derived medicines the company produces.
Plasma contains proteins and antibodies. There are people who are missing those antibodies or they're missing a protein that helps their body function. And what Grifols then does is we collect this plasma and then isolate those proteins and antibodies to produce a medicine.
To learn more about donating plasma and to find a Grifols center near you, visit grifolsplasma.com.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
Across the country, parents are showing up at school board meetings, challenging the books their kids have access to in classrooms or libraries.
Both of these books include pedophilia.
There are children in the audience here.
Do not interrupt my time. Yes. Do not interrupt my time.
I would like to remind everybody.
I will stand here until my time is restored and my time is finished.
That was in late September in Fairfax County, Virginia. But it's relatively tame compared to what happened in Kanawha County, West Virginia, in 1974. More than 1,000 protesters gathered to object to books in the county's new curriculum, including the autobiography of Malcolm X and works by E.E. Cummings and Sigmund Freud. The protests turned violent with shootings, beatings, and some ending up in jail. All to say, the pushback against certain books in schools isn't new, but it's getting attention. In September, Republican state legislator Matt Krause from Fort Worth, Texas, released a list of 850 books he once investigated for how they're used in schools. The books include LGBTQ characters and cover topics like anti-racism and sex education. And the authors of three of those books are with us today for the latest in our Writer's Room series. With us from New York City is Jacqueline Woodson, the author of Red to the Bone and Brown Girl Dreaming. Her new book coming out in January is called The Year We Learned to Fly. Jacqueline, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Also with us from outside Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is Lori Halls Anderson. Her books include Speak, Shout, and Twisted, and they've been repeatedly challenged. Lori, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And finally, from the Bay Area of California, Maya Kobabe, a cartoonist and the author and illustrator of Genderqueer, a memoir. Maya, welcome to 1A.
Hi, I'm looking forward to this conversation.
So Maya, your graphic memoir, Genderqueer, has been challenged by parents at several school districts across the country in the past couple of months. It's not on curriculums, but it's in school libraries. And in some places, it's been removed from those libraries. What story are you telling in Genderqueer?
So Genderqueer is a memoir. It's about my own experience growing up and wrestling with questions of identity, sexuality, and specifically gender. It's about coming out to my parents and my friends and my family, and then pondering sort of what it means to be a role model as a non-binary adult who also sometimes teaches and is an author.
Why did you write and draw the book?
I mean, a huge part of my motivation was really to explain sort of what gender means to me and what, when I say I'm non-binary, what that means to me, to my own parents and extended family. In a lot of ways, the book is like a long letter to my own loved ones. And when I wrote it, I wasn't 100% sure if it would actually be meaningful or interesting to people who didn't know me personally. And I'm really glad that people who don't know me have found things in it to relate to and enjoy.
How did you learn that your book was being challenged in schools?
I found out about it by being tagged in an Instagram video of that fairly contentious Fairfax County school board meeting that you just played a clip of audio from. And it was very late at night. I was just going to bed. I got tagged in the video and I kind of took one look at it and was like, this does not look like something I should watch before I try to sleep. Mm. So I just blocked, deleted, and I went to bed.
Mm. Now, Lori, several of your books have been challenged or banned at schools, but none more than your 1999 book, Speak. It's repeatedly been included in the American Library Association's list of top 10 banned books, including in the 2020 list released this September. And that book is on some student curriculums. What is Speak about?
Speak is the story of a ninth grade girl told from her point of view who has been sexually assaulted a few weeks before ninth grade began. She didn't tell anybody, and the book covers her year in ninth grade trying to process what happened to her and to find the courage to speak up about this hard thing.
What types of complaints have been made against Speak?
Oh, my goodness. It's been called soft pornography. The most recent wave of attacks that have been coming all seem to come from, they use similar language, and they are parents who don't want the book taught to their sons because they're afraid the book will make boys feel uncomfortable.
Now, in the version of the book I have, there is a letter at the end of it that's written by a man, and it's about consent. Has that been pointed out as a major place of contention in the book?
I've not heard anybody complain about that letter. That letter was written by children's author Jason Reynolds. It's an extraordinary letter. It's important to remember that we can't only focus on the victims of sexual violence, although they deserve a lot of attention and we don't give them the support that they need. But if we really want to make a dent in the amount of sexual violence that happens to our children, we have to focus on the people who become the perpetrators. And those perpetrators, at some point, most of them were in a middle school classroom and a high school classroom. Talking about sexuality is the third rail of parenthood. Most parents don't know how to do it and would rather avoid the conversations. And that's why we continue to have generation after generation of children who become the victims and the perpetrators of sexual violence. Books like mine, books like Grown by Tiffany D. Jackson, help change these conversations. They open the door to talk about these hard things in a safe and productive way.
Now, Jacqueline, your books have been challenged or banned at schools since the 90s and often show up on school curriculums. How did you first find out this was happening?
I was pretty ignorant to it for a long time. And, you know, I started writing before social media. And I remember getting a call from Judy Blume because she was putting together an anthology that would be called The Places I Never Meant to Be. And it was an anthology of books by authors that had been challenged. And I was like, I've never been challenged. She's like, oh, yes, you have. And that was kind of the wake-up call to start really looking into it. And then Scholastic published From the Notebooks of Melanin Sun. And that was when I started getting letters, basically hate mail about why that book shouldn't be published.
Well, let's talk about your most recent book, Red at the Bone. What is it about?
Red at the Bone is about a family that descends from the victims of the Tulsa race massacre. And it's about a family, two economic a family from two economic backgrounds coming together. So it's about Black wealth and the plundering of Black wealth. And it's about a girl who gets pregnant at 15 and what happens inside that family when that happens. And it's an adult book.
Now, you're a highly celebrated author. Your books are bestsellers. You've won the highest awards for children's writing, including the Newbery Medal. What issue have people taken with your work?
Every issue. What issue haven't they taken with it? If You Come Softly is about an interracial relationship, it was challenged because it depicts an interracial relationship. From the Notebooks of Melanin Sun is about a boy coming to understand his own identity in the shadow of his mom's identity, and his mother is coming out. So, of course, it was challenged because of the issue of the mom. The Dear One was challenged because it supposedly deals with teenage pregnancy. Many, many things. Mm-hmm. Red at the Bone is being challenged basically because it's talking about the Tulsa Race Massacre, and that's a bit of American history that supposedly, quote unquote, makes people feel uncomfortable.
I know from you, Maya, you shared who you wrote your book, Genderqueer, for, that it was a love letter, you said, to your family. Do you think about what age group should be reading your book?
Yeah, I mean, I had an adult audience in mind, but usually when people ask me, I say it's appropriate for high school and above. And usually I say that because I, as a freshman in high school, was wrestling with all of the same questions and confusions and themes that my book talks about. And I was really searching for this type of information. I was like desperately looking for books about trans and non-binary identities, characters, and just like what it looked like to be like an adult queer person. And so, like, I wanted that information so much at that age.
I'm just curious to hear from each of you as authors how you respond, how you feel when you hear people talking about burning books. Jacqueline?
You know, it's visceral, I have to say, this idea that people can't hear what they're saying. I mean, even the very remedial adjectives he's using, the bad stuff. We have to eradicate it. Like, that's very dangerous language to me. And the idea that I doubt the people who are talking about this have cracked the book, have read a book. So, it really kind of goes through my body and makes me think this is just an awful way to be moving through the world. And that kind of rage and their fear is just sort of heartbreaking.
Maya, what about for you?
Yeah, it's wild. It's just so strange that, just as Jacqueline said, that they can't quite hear maybe what they're saying. And also, it's like, we're in an era of digital information. Burning a book is something I deeply disagree with, but even if you burn every copy, all of our books are available as ebooks and audiobooks. So even removing physical copies doesn't actually remove the book from circulation. So it's also, there's something about it that just, it's so symbolic, and I kind of just don't understand it. I don't understand where it comes from.
Lori, what about your reaction?
Just when I think I can't get any angrier, a week like this past week comes along and I'm like, oh, there's another level of rage. Here we are. I think some of this is motivated by fear, and I respect people who are afraid. I cannot respect their choices, and I can want to have a conversation with them. And using books like these, I think adult book clubs all over the country should be picking up these books for book club discussions among adults, and have conversations about why are people upset. In the years that Speak's been challenged, there have been many occasions when the book was challenged by a parent who heard about page 133, the chapter that starts there, and just wants the book pulled. Often in schools, a parent will have to read the entire book and then sit down and have a discussion with a committee that's school members and also members from the community. Often the book is put back into curriculum because the parent who took the time to actually read the entire book recognizes that, yes, this book talks about a hard thing, that the context of this hard thing is an important one. Just like all of the books we've been discussing and the books by my fellow writers on this panel, we have to look at the books in the context. I also think that these books are being used as bricks. for a lot of people who really don't care what the kids are reading, but see the opportunity to score political points or to get a mob going, the book is the first brick that is being thrown at children. Because any child who identifies with what's going on in these books, or who has a friend who can see themselves in the stories of these books, they're being targeted for violence. By banning the book, you send the message to kids, it's okay to reject this kind of person. It's okay. We don't have to pay attention to the victims of sexual violence, or for people who aren't white, or for people who aren't straight or cis. And then that opens a door to every kind of violence, beginning with bullying and ending with death.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott is asking his state's Association of School Boards to investigate whether any pornographic materials are being provided in schools, and if so, to forward anyone providing those materials to authorities for prosecution. But it's unclear what constitutes pornography. And Lori, you just heard from a student that a parent is accusing your book, Twisted, of containing a pornographic scene. Give us that background.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is there's a scene in Twisted which is told from a teenage boy's point of view, a teenage boy who's a senior in high school, and he's really trying to figure out his life, and it's very confusing. And he's at a party, and a girl he has a crush on is hammered. She's very drunk, and she drags him upstairs, and she wants to have a sexual encounter with him. And the main character, the boy, in his head, he kind of weighs, you know, this moment, and should I do this? I want to do this, but I shouldn't do this. But why? She's really there. And we get to see him work through the decision to be a person of a higher moral character and to not hurt this girl and to take care of her in this moment. And that's the scene that several parents have recently accused of being pornographic, because it's a scene that involves, it's almost like, I don't understand the parent who believes that their child is somehow not exposed to sex or doesn't have any sexual thoughts or feelings before they're 18 years old. And it's almost like they want to wait until their child is out of their house so they don't have to deal with it. Instead of being an alert parent, a loving, engaged parent who recognizes that sexuality is a part of human development, and wouldn't you much rather have the opportunities to talk to your kids about books like this and all the other great ones out there, both the nonfiction books that talk about the science and the biology and the neurology involved, but also the books that open up doors to discuss the ethical considerations as well as the legal ones.
Now, Lori, I believe both you and Jacqueline are both parents, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Jacqueline, I'm wondering if there's been a book for you that was maybe challenging, but it provided an opportunity for you to have a conversation with your kid.
You know, it's interesting. I have two kids. I have a 19-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son, and of course, Speak was such a great book to share with both of them in talking about consent and in talking about, you know, trauma and being able to speak up and speak out. Our family is biracial, and we talk about race all the time. And I think that in talking, you can't live in a house where race is not talked about when you have a brown son and when you yourself are brown. And I think it goes hand in hand. I'm so surprised that people don't talk about sex with their kids, like Lori was saying. They are sexual human beings from a very young age. I mean, not sexually active, but they're thinking about sex. So, and they're thinking about race, and they're seeing stuff on television, and they're seeing stuff out in the world. And you have to be able to have these conversations with them. So I remember getting everybody Robie Harris's "It's Perfectly Normal," which is this great book for young people about understanding sex and sexuality. And what Robie Harris had said was just put it in your kid, put it in the bathroom, put it somewhere where your kids are. Don't hand it to them, but let them pick it up on their own. And maybe they'll come to you with questions. But just being able to put that green light out there and saying it's okay to have these conversations. And I think that what Lori was saying, I agree with what Lori's saying in that, you know, there are people out there just in deep denial of the fact that these kids were made through some form of sex and will grow up to be sexual beings themselves and are already thinking about sex and sexuality and gender and all of these different things. And yet parents are saying, let me just try to erase it. And that kind of fear is just ridiculous and heartbreaking.
Here's an email that came into our inbox from Jonquilin, who said, whenever we had to read Huckleberry Finn in school, my mother would always talk with my teacher. She thought kids used it as an excuse to use the N-word and that the book wasn't worth all that. She also would tell me the story of how my grandfather got the book Little Black Sambo banned from her school district when she was a kid. She was the only black child in the class. The teacher read it, pointed at my mom, and said, Sambo was black, just like you. We also got this tweet, I'm all for leaving books in libraries, even controversial ones, but therein lies the rub. I'm old enough to remember an effort to remove The Adventures of Huck Finn, and I wonder if we believe there are books that do need to be banned, and where is the line? I'd love to hear from each of you on this. Jacqueline, go ahead.
I heartily disapprove of removing books on any count. I think those books need to be people need to learn to teach those books responsibly, because I know that Little Black Sambo story. I know being called Little Black Sambo, and I know that I wish my teacher had had a better sense of how to teach that book. Mm-hmm. I think removing books erases history, and we need to remember the history of this country so we don't repeat it.
Maya, what about you?
Yeah, I feel the same. I think even books that have really hard or challenging topics, like, we need to put them in the context of history, of when they were written, of like what the political motivations were around it. Like, I think what needs to happen is a nuanced conversation around challenging material.
And Lori, I'll give you the last word here.
I appreciate that. I think this is a great moment to shout out to all those educators who are working all the time after the two hardest years in the history of this country to do exactly that, to come up with book lists and educational units that will be inclusive, but also be honest, be real about how did we get here? How do we reach out to all of the children in our spaces? How do we make everybody feel seen and appreciated? Let's leave this up to the educators. They're the professionals. I think that we're in really good hands if we are led by teachers and by their students.
That's Lori Halls Anderson, the author of many books, including Speak, Shout, and Twisted. Also with us, Maya Kobabe, a cartoonist and the author and illustrator of Gender Queer, a memoir, and Jacqueline Woodson, the author of Red at the Bone, Brown Girl Dreaming, and many other books. Jacqueline, Lori, Maya, thank you so much for speaking with us. Today's producer was Avery J.C. Kleinman. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.